Okay, second part of chapter 6, section 3, question 4. What efforts were made to make business more competitive to rein in big business? Well, again, most of it was done ultimately as small businesses and consumers felt like they were being mistreated and prices were too high for a lot of different products where certain businesses had close to monopoly power or total monopoly power in some cases. There began to be some legislation. The first major piece was the Sherman Antitrust Act, 1890, if memory serves me correct, to begin to break up some of these trusts. You can read about this in the book, that had created markets where they essentially had monopoly power. Now, originally, the Sherman Antitrust didn't do a whole heck of a lot. You know, Congress passed it, but it wasn't very well enforced. It wasn't very well funded to go out and break up some of these big businesses that had too much power and eliminated competition. Over time, it evolved to where it was used as a means by which to get rid of some of these big businesses, including the Standard Oil Trust that was broken up in the early 1900s. So it took time for it to develop because for the most part, again, our country is one at that particular time of very little government intervention. There's a term in your objective sheet, laissez-faire economics. This is the time when that is particularly in place. Laissez-faire, hands off, allow to do, let business do what it needs to do to build this country in this industrial age and to do so without very much or any government intervention. It's not until the late 1800s, early 1900s, where there begins to be government intervention, albeit limited at first, to somewhat rein in the laissez-faire economics and some of the abuses that came with it. So, finally, towards early 1900, you will begin to see some of these mega companies' power and their monopoly control to begin to be broken up, but it's kind of a gradual process, truth be told. Labor unions, simple. They can be a complex conversation, but we'll keep it simple. Workers toward the late 1870s and 80s began to organize themselves. They knew how poorly they were being treated, how awful the working conditions were, how long the working day was, how little the pay was. So they began to organize themselves into unions to try to improve those conditions. Unskilled labor unions, skilled labor unions, some that were welcoming kind of for all groups of people, some allowing black workers and women in, others being very exclusive that only a particular type of worker would be allowed into the union. Skilled worker unions probably having greater power to affect change than unskilled labor because unskilled labor could be easily replaced by immigrants getting off the boat if all you had to do was push a button to work a piece of machinery. One of the most important things to understand about unions is the idea of collective bargaining. I don't even think I put this as a term. I should have. The idea that if a union negotiates on behalf of all of its workers collectively, then they can get a better deal as opposed to one worker going in and trying to negotiate his own deal with his boss and basically being told that he's not needed and don't let the door hit you on the backside on your way out because we can replace you with somebody else. If you have a large group of workers that is asking for better conditions, then maybe there's a chance to gain some traction and improve the conditions for workers. And a lot of concessions were ultimately won over time, but unions had a hard time at first getting traction. Businesses did everything they possibly could to keep them from organizing, and government wasn't very user-friendly. There were some very, very famous strikes. Question number 6. There is the Haymarket Affair. There's the Homestead strike involving Carnegie steel workers. There's the Pullman rail strike in the 1890s. There's a bunch of them. They're mentioned briefly in the book. They're also in the crash course if you take a look at those things. A lot of these things ultimately ended poorly for the strikers because a lot of times government would intervene to put an end to the strikes because they were having such an effect on economic activity that various presidents felt like they needed to end the strikes, and they did so by use of military force. The Haymarket Affair was a very unfortunate thing where some radicals who weren't necessarily even associated with the striking workers exploded a bomb and killed some police officers. So all of a sudden, unions got attached to more radical activities, including the killing of police officers. So unions got the bad rap for being responsible for what happened in that particular incident. So union membership dropped in many of those unions from hundreds of thousands down to nothing because of the bad rap associated with being in a union that workers no longer wanted to be associated with certain unions. So it was a very, very, very violent time with some horrible consequences in some of these strikes, and again, some horrible consequences for workers because of the horrible, horrible factory conditions in many different industries. It takes time, but over time, generation or two in many cases, finally workers will attain some better pay and some shorter work days and some better conditions. But it's a long, hard slog to achieve those things. And again, businesses did everything they could to keep unions from forming in their particular businesses or industries, firing rabble-rousers, people who were trying to stir up unions, trying to do everything they could to basically pressure people from joining unions. And again, the government initially is not very favorable to these unions because of the effect of what they are doing in terms of kind of slowing the economic growth through all of these strikes by the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds in the late 1800s, and because of some of the kind of radical ideas that were associated with some of these unions as being very anti-American, and the IWW with its kind of socialist leanings, those things were not approved of by the government. It's really not until you get to the 1930s or so during the Great Depression that government really begins to kind of sanction unions as having a reason to exist in our country. So there's a long, long struggle of unions and business and industry going back to the 1870s, which, again, it took time for a lot of these workers to ultimately gain improved conditions. And ultimately, if those things were being focused on, better pay, better working conditions, maybe shorter work days, those things were ultimately achieved, but again, over a long period of time in many cases.